Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Toto, I've a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. That's right, Dorothy. This is Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, a very happy host indeed, because our special guest today is actress Margaret Avery, who earned an Oscar nomination for her portrayal of the sultry blues singer in The Color Purple. She's not just an actress, she's a fighter and a survivor. But before we hear from Margaret, I want to bring in Nikki Starr, my producer extraordinaire. Hi, Nikki.
Hello, Betty Jo. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I'm especially excited today. I understand that, like me, you've seen The Color Purple and
yes, ma'am.
Really enjoyed it.
Yes, ma'am. I did. I'm very excited for our guest.
Well, I feel the same way. That movie is a true masterpiece. And now it's my great pleasure to introduce a woman who, besides her Oscar nomination, has won many awards for her acting and for her activism, including a Los Angeles Drama Critics Award and an NAACP Lifetime Achievement Award. Nikki, in addition to acting, Margaret lectures across the country and even abroad on issues involving women of color, and in her speeches she seeks to empower, enlighten, and inspire. But she does more than just talk about it. She also works with at-risk teens and battered women in Greater Los Angeles. Fortunately for her film fans, though, she's appearing in two new films, one that opened last Friday and called Welcome Home, Roscoe Jenkins, and another one that will be opening, I believe, in March called Tyler Perry's Meet the Browns. Welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters, Margaret.
Well, thank you, Betty and Nikki, and thank you all the fans out there. Thank you so very much.
Well, it's a real honor to have you on our show, Margaret. And to start with, I'm wondering if we could just go back even before The Color Purple and have
that's,
you tell us.
That's going back pretty far, Betty.
Oh, back.
You
back
know, I'm into senior moments now, they call them, you know, short, that memory thing.
Well, welcome to the club. I have those. But I wonder if you remember some of the obstacles you faced as an actress before you received your Oscar nomination.
Well, you know, it's something there, you know, because when I was younger, I had such persistence and drive, and I look back at that time in my life wondering, how did I ever expect to become an actress when there were really no images on television? I think at one time we had the program Julia.
Yes.
Now, I said senior moment. You know who started
Diane
that.
Diana Carroll.
Diane Carroll.
Right.
And so that was about it. And I think back in the 60s, there was a show that Cicely Tyson was on, something Naked City or something. But as a whole, we did not have people of color on television. And so when you talk about the struggle in the beginning, I think that it was minimal, because in the sense that I never thought about I couldn't do it. You know, it's like there's something about being youthful and thinking it's almost like I'm infallible, you know. I came to Los Angeles after teaching, inspired by the late Martin Luther King, He talked about the dream, and so I said, okay, I enjoy teaching, but my real passion is acting. And at that time, I had been moonlighting, singing in clubs on the weekends, and while I was teaching and studying voice and studying acting and dance. So I said, okay, I can either go to New York and go for stage or go to Los Angeles and go for film. So it dawned on me that when I was in New York, it was just such a fast pace. We're talking about in the late 60s. I said, you know, I grew up in San Diego. This pace is fast for me. And at that time, there was no such thing as the homeless. But New York at that time had it. And I could see people just step over them. And I felt that that was so cruel. They'd be passed out and or sleeping on sidewalks. And I thought, this is a cold city. I'm not going to be able to survive here. I'd rather be a starving artist 125 miles from home and in the sunshine than in this cold New York. So I came to L.A. and continued studying. And I always advocate have an education if you're starting out in the show biz, because you never know when you need it. And it was, when I came to Los Angeles, I started substitute teaching, and that subsidized me for the rent and all the expense of getting in the business. You got
to have something to fall back on.
Yeah, but you have to have photographs. You've got to have the resume, all this copying thing that we didn't have access in our own homes today. You had to go out and get all this stuff done. The voice lessons, all of these things cost so much money. So once things opened up, a friend of mine introduced me to a commercial agency, and they didn't sign me on right away. I mean, they kept stalling me. I think because out of the friendship with this person, they didn't want to say, you know, we don't have any jobs for women of color. I mean, but they just kept saying, well, we have to meet and talk it over. So every week I was calling, have you talked it over yet? Have you? I didn't have the ego to say, well, gee, they don't want me. Forget them. I just kept saying, well, did you talk yet? I mean, I just assume they hadn't talked yet. But what they were saying was that because of our friend, we won't say no, but we're not signing you, kid, you know.
Oh,
but what happened out of continuing to study and do free theater on the weekends and honing my craft any way that I could, what happened? Somehow Wall Street or all the ad agencies said, hey, you know, this ethnic group that we call, I don't know, at that time, maybe I don't know if they're calling us Negroes or Blacks or Coloreds, but they said, you know, they use shampoo and they use deodorant. There's a whole market out there that we haven't tapped. Well, when they decided that, the agents start calling me, and I was getting commercial after commercial, washing teeth, brushing my teeth, flossing, using laundry detergent. I mean,
I've probably seen some of those commercials.
Oh, well, there was a product called Chipsters potato chips. I was running through a field. There was a mouthwash, Lavoris at that time, and and so it afforded me to stop teaching because I was substitute teaching at that time, full time meaning every day. And so I was able to then begin to focus totally on my career.
And
so when you say struggle, one thing led to another. It's like after I started doing the commercials, then the black exploitation film started up. And I don't know if the fans out there know what we were labeling as black exploitation films. I will, if there's a question, I'll explain.
Well, I think we have so many movie addicts who listen in. I think they do know. But
they were like B and probably C films mostly. But people of color were trained actors, and we went right into those films. And it was a time, Betty, that Hollywood was in a real financial lull. I mean, there was box office was terrible. And these black exploitation films brought Hollywood back, as I understand it.
Oh, and I remember how big Shaft was. That particular,
and
movie.
Sweetbacks or something, I don't know of. But there were all these films, but I was never seen by, quote, the right people. And what put me on the map was doing my theater work. Clint Eastwood came to this little community theater and saw a performance of mine in a play called Does a Tiger Wear a Necktie?
What a title.
And it was done in New York, but we were doing it, and he was there to see another actor, a male actor. Well, he for whatever he was looking at him for, he didn't cast him in his next film, but he did cast me, and that was called Magnum Force.
Oh, wow.
And so if you remember that film, I played this hooker that's coming out of the hotel, and she's all dressed up. She gets into a cab, and the next thing you know, she's talking to a pip who's saying, hey, you've been holding out on the money for me, and he winds up, ooh, my mother hated this part. He throws Drano down my throat, and I gag and die. But
I remember
even,
that scene.
Do you remember?
Absolutely.
Even though that was a cameo role, the right, quote, people saw me.
Like Steven Spielberg?
Well, not yet. All the television people. And so then I started doing, I don't want to say black exploitation television, but they all had these themes where when my characters like myself, my role was always crying over the boyfriend that was going to jail or he did something wrong, and I did that particular role over and over in different wigs and different costumes on Kojak and
Miami Vice? Was that later?
That's a little years later. Kojak, Streets of San Francisco with Mike Douglas and
Murder, She Wrote might have been a little bit later, too.
Murder, She Wrote was just before Color Purple. But, I mean, they all had the same scenario, the storyline.
Well, I'll bet everything changed for you.
David Jensen, you know.
Right,
Harry O. Yeah. I was a sophisticated informant, but I was like this sophisticated hooker, and he would come to me. I mean, if you want to know a funny story, I'll tell you that one. He would come to my character would meet him at a nice bar, and
yes.
he with this wonderful gravel voice of his, he'd say, "Well, what do you know about such and such thoughts?" All you know.
I remember those two.
He was so wonderful.
Oh.
Should I invoke this little story right now about him?
Well, definitely. I want us to be
Sure
to have time to talk about The Color Purple, but go ahead.
Okay, I grew up watching him. For a long time, I watched him on the one where he's always running from the police. He was played the doctor.
And The Fugitive.
The Fugitive.
Yes.
I told you about my memory. The Fugitive. And he was this doctor wrongly accused of murdering his wife.
Yes.
So every segment was about him getting involved with people and trying to do a good thing. But then the police would almost be right on his shirt tails. And so in doing this role with him, for the first time I worked with him, and it was a recurring role, the first time that I worked
Ruby
with
Dome,
him.
Ruby Dome, right?
Ruby was her name.
Yeah,
oh, my
Ruby
God,
Dome.
You're good. anyway, he said, you know, we did a couple of takes, and then, you know, we were waiting for the camera to load up, and he looks over at me as David Jensen, not his character, but he looks at me, and he says, I see you, are you watching the door? You know, and I had to think. And I didn't say anything, but in my revelation of that, in that moment, I realized, oh, my God, I keep thinking the police are going to come in and get it.
You mixed up the characters. That's
And that's how, you know, I was enriched, drenched in this other character of his.
Well, we all got drenched with that
character. Yeah.
Oh, how did you get into The Color Purple?
Okay,
Margaret.
That was a grueling audition sequence. I had just come back from singing in Jakarta, Indonesia, and I was just destined to play the role, as far as I know. People from, you know, actors, we're all very competitive. We don't tell each other about interviews. I mean, it's just not our nature, as you might say. But when I got back on my answering service, I had all kinds of messages saying, "Margaret, have you gone up for The Color Purple? Have you gone up for The Color Purple? You should get your agent to tell you, you know, get you an interview." And so when I called my agent at that time, they said, "Well, Margaret, you know, the casting director doesn't feel you're right for it. We've been trying and trying, but they won't see you. So we've just washed our hands of it."
I heard they wanted Tina Turner.
That's right. And thank goodness for me, Tina Turner turned it down. Did you see her on the Grammy?
Thank goodness for everybody.
Thank goodness for us, right,
Betty
Jo?
That's right, Nikki.
Yeah. Anyway, she turned it down for her own personal reasons. And so what happened was that Reuben Cannon was the casting director. He's working very closely now with Tyler Perry. And I wrote him a letter after reading the book. I went out and read the book. Now, see, that's what most people never did. They didn't read the book.
Oh, they lost out with that. What a wonderful book.
And so after reading the book, I really just fell in love with Suge. I really identified with her. It was like a soul thing that I understood that character. So, and I didn't know that that was the one that people were thinking of for me. So anyway, I get in touch with Reuben Cannon, and I said, "Look," and I'm writing him a letter because I've known him over the years. He's cast me in a lot of these other television things, and I said, "Look, Reuben, you haven't seen me in a long time, and I really feel that I'm right for this film. I've been out of the country singing, so please see me. And if I don't hear from you," I said, "I know where you live, and I'll sit on your doorstep until you let me come in and read."
you were using some of those lines from other characters you played.
So he gets the letter, of course, and then he called my agent and said, "Yeah, let Margaret come in." So he says, "Look, Margaret," when I get there, he says, "I know you're not right for the role, but here..."
Oh, great.
Well, because the other producers had told them what they were looking for. They, you know, remember Quincy Jones was involved with this.
Yes.
as a producer. So, you know, I can't speak for him, but the fact that he wanted Tina Turner tells you that he wanted a singer.
Yes.
You know, and he's a music guy. Why not?
Right.
So he says, "You're not right for the role, but listen, come back Monday and read this." And I'd already read the book, you know, so I knew the scene practically already. So I go in and I do the reading. He reads opposite me, and he's a wonderful reader. I mean, some casting directors hold you back because they're such bad readers. You're trying to ignore what they're giving you. But Reuben was wonderful, and he put me on tape and let Steven see it, Steven Spielberg, our director, and the rest is history.
I just think that was one of the best performances I've ever seen on film. And the chemistry between you and Whoopi Goldberg, it was just so... Oh, I mean, it's
yeah,
so electric.
Well, it was such a, Betty, that was such a wonderful ensemble group. I mean, and we all wanted to improve our personal best because we love the project. So we wanted to please Alice Walker, and she came on the set quite a bit.
Oh.
And, of course, I was really nervous. It was my first A film, you might say, and it was Whoopi's very first film. It was
That's
Oprah's
right.
first. It was Oprah's first film. She was discovered in Chicago doing her talk show when she was discovered by Quincy Jones, and he said, oh, she's perfect for Sophia. And so she'd never done a film. Steven Spielberg, who was very, really famous at that time, he'd never directed a dramatic film. He did the E.T. and Jaws and some other things, but that wasn't considered the genre that this was considered. So we all were very challenged. And to be able to look at the results, this labor of love, and like it, I mean, it was just thrilling for me. And for me, I was the last character cast.
Oh.
And so I didn't have that much time to prepare. And one of the things Stephen had asked me to do was to gain weight. Well, at that time, I was even smaller than Whoopi. Whoopi used to be a little rail.
Yes, tiny, I remember
you
that.
You know, really. And he wanted me to be in between Whoopi and Sophia, Oprah. So my thing was to gain 30 pounds in a month. I had 4 weeks to gain 30 pounds.
Lots of chocolate.
He provided me with, it wasn't all painful. The workout was painful. He provided me with a trainer. And for 2 weeks, I didn't gain a pound. I was eating this food and working out to build muscle, not to just gain weight, but to gain the weight strategically so that it would look right. 2 weeks, I kept getting on the scale, and I thought, oh, my God. But during that 2 weeks, I said, you know what? I'll never be in this position again as a woman to be able to just gain weight. I'm going to treat myself, doggone it, these painful exercises that I have to do with the weights and all that. Well, you know what I did, Betty?
What?
I set my alarm every morning for 2 a.m., and I got up, and I ate my favorite thing, a whole pint of Haagen-Dazs ice cream.
Oh, yummy. I think that's a great way. That's a great way to gain weight.
French vanilla, baby.
Oh,
French vanilla. That's my favorite.
Oh, my gosh. I'm getting hungry and drooling here just thinking about it.
Oh, how about you, Nikki? Don't you like ice cream?
Oh, she has a sweet tooth.
And so that.
I love ice cream, yes.
Yeah.
That helped. And so I was eating mostly healthy foods, avocado, whole wheat bread, and creamy salad dressing. So those are the things you want to stay away from.
Right, but
Betty Jo, can you imagine
now,
having to eat those things, right?
Oh, I would just love it. I would just
it'd be
love
a
it.
But,
you know, our time is going by so fast.
It
and
is.
Margaret, I want to make sure that you talk a little bit about these two films, The Welcome Home, Roscoe Jenkins.
Oh, okay.
Like such a funny movie, and Tyler Perry's Meet the Browns. Could you say
okay.
a few words about how much fun you had working on those two movies?
I really did have a good time with Welcome Home, Roscoe Jenkins, because I couldn't help to. The cast is all the comedians.
Martin Lawrence and Cedric the Entertainer. I just laughed thinking about it.
And Monique, and then there was Michael Epps. And so Jimmy and I, James Earl Jones, we were the two that was supposed to show that the family did come from a couple of sane people.
Yes, you gave a very down-to-earth performance.
You know, but that was fun. I hadn't had so much fun since working with Richard Pryor, Which Way Is Up. That was quite a few years ago. But it was my first opportunity to do comedy, because after Hollywood knows you as a dramatic actor, it's hard to get out of that slot. So,
yeah, you get typecast, right.
Absolutely. And unless you're in the position to produce, write your own material, it's really difficult. So anybody out there who wants to get in the business and you have the talent to write, be sure you do that, explore that, because it's the writers that really control the industry as far as projects go.
And pretty soon they'll be able to get back to work. Maybe
absolutely.
Tomorrow.
They're supposed to be back now. I think.
Keep our fingers crossed. Well, and you're working with Tyler Perry on Meet the Browns, right?
And that comes out. I haven't seen that one yet. I haven't seen a screening of it. I hope I'm still in it. But that was a delight. And I love Tyler Perry's films in that he always has a positive message about family and getting together and concentrating on the unity of family, positive relationships.
He brings them in, doesn't he? He really brings in the audience.
Oh, he does. And I love his message. There's not any violence to do it, and it's people have fun. It's entertaining. I can't say enough about him.
Well, he's wonderful. I can't believe the time has gone by so fast.
Oh,
it's been
I'm sorry. Did I talk too much?
Well, no, not whatsoever.
We need to have more time with you, but I was wondering, is there anything in the chat, Nikki, that...
The chat is just saying how much they love her and that they're just very excited about her new projects.
Oh, yes, great.
And the color purple seems to be a favorite amongst them.
Yes, well, who?
Yes.
They have good taste. We have very intelligent, perceptive people in our in our chat room.
Well, let the chat room know that I'm trying to join the 21st century. I'm trying to launch a website, and that would be margaretavery.com.
All right. I'll put that in there. Just right now.
MargaretAvery.com.
Yes. And they can, I'll try to keep them posted on what I'm doing. And like I said, I've just really... haven't really mastered emailing, so I'm a little behind, but I'm catching up.
You've been on Blog Talk Radio, so that means you've mastered one of the great new technologies.
Oh, thank you.
But Margaret, I just want to thank you for being such a splendid guest and interesting, so entertaining, and I know that Nikki and all your fans that listened in and the people in the chat room just wish you all the best.
Well, thank you so much. I feel very blessed.
And we're very blessed to have had you on the show, and I know
you're
working hard on important causes. Maybe when we have you on again, we can talk about that. But
okay.
But thanks again, and I hate to be the one to have to wrap things up.
Yeah.
That's how it goes.
Parting is such sweet sorrow.
Thanks so much. This is Betty Jo Tucker giving a big shout out to the folks at Blog Talk Radio for all their support in connection with this show. Special thanks again to Margaret Avery for stopping by and sharing so many interesting experiences with us, and to Nikki Starr for everything she does to make Movie Addict Headquarters happen. Thanks also to everyone who listened live or to the archives or participated in the chat. Please come back next time for a lively discussion among the critics at Real Talk Reviews concerning our Oscar predictions. In the meantime, check out our reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's R-E-E-L, realtalkreviews.com. And remember, dear listeners, don't let your life become like a horror movie. Be sure to protect yourself from identity theft, which, by the way, is the fastest growing crime in America, by going to www.lifelock.com, that's LIFELOCK, and learning about the important services offered there. Now, when you sign up, be sure to use our special code to get a 10% discount. Remember the code, it's all one word, and it's Real Talk, R-E-E-L-T-A-L-K. Now, as usual, to close the show, here's the multi-talented A.J. Daniels with a song Nikki and I always dedicate to all our loyal Blog Talk Radio listeners.
Adore you. Stay with me and me. and be